Hello and welcome to the Money Marketing Podcast. I'm Katie Pigden, the editor of the publication. It suddenly dawned on me the other day that I have been working with Money Marketing for just over 2 years now. I joined as news editor with very little knowledge of the financial services sector, and I hate to admit it, the financial advice profession. I'm sorry, but it's true. I've been doing my best since then to get my head around the acronyms, the abbreviations, and the jargon. Yes, I said jargon. I know every profession is guilty of it. Journalism is absolutely no exception. We talk about stuff such as NIBs, that's news in brief, the small stories down the side of a newspaper or magazine. We have a whole host of other terms that we use as well. Hopefully we don't say it too much to the outside world, but I'm sure it slips out from time to time. I can't class myself as the newcomer anymore, as we've had some brilliant people join our editorial team. One such person is reporter Momodou Moussa Touré, and he will be talking you through his weekend essay and his experience of getting his head around all of this jargon. He's been doing a fantastic job. I do hope you enjoy.
Weekend essay. Is there too much jargon in the financial services industry? I am a newbie in the financial services industry, and I have something to say about the wide use of jargon, abbreviations, and acronyms. I am currently navigating my way through the fog of financial jargon, and I'm confused by terms such as DB transfers, RDR, and ESG. I thought to myself, blimey, what did I just sign myself up for? Two things crossed my mind. Firstly, I felt out of my depth. And secondly, I felt like I was in the game show Countdown, being tested for lexical dexterity about the financial sector. I recently joined the Money Marketing editorial team as a reporter after a stint with the tabloids. I was tired of writing about scandals, lottery winners, and fraudsters. I just became bored of sensational stories, wanted out, and was looking for a fresh start in a niche publication. And financial journalism is an attractive prospect, as it is one of the last journalism frontiers for me to explore. I've always eschewed the financial sector due to my problems with numbers, as anything to do with complex numbers felt like rocket science. But I decided to face my fears after realizing that my weakness in numeracy was having an impact on my finances. Money always burns a hole in my pocket, and the fight against delayed gratification has been increasingly onerous. Then came the COVID lockdown. Despite all the terrible news associated with the pandemic, it gave me the space and time for quiet introspection. I had a eureka moment and realized that I needed to sort out my money woes. I was not getting any younger, and I wanted to do the right thing for my son's future. My bank account was in dire need of a financial MOT. The internet became the convenient pathway for my Homeric journey to financial freedom. Social media was the first port of call. I love Instagram. I find it less toxic and hostile than the other social networking platforms. It's picturesque and visually pleasing, an idyllic place to escape the humdrum of my boring life. What is there not to like about attractive images of cute dogs and cats and beautiful models cavorting beside swimming pools in far-flung tropical islands? Alongside the cute images was an avalanche of Bitcoin traders and scammers who promised huge windfall if you could only hand over your cash. I avoided them like the plague. In financial matters, have always followed the old adage. If it sounds too good to be true, it probably is. So I blocked the ones that sent me friend requests, and avoided interacting with cryptocurrency accounts and traders. It did not take too long until the Instagram algorithm caught up. So I was seeing less of this crypto craze on my timeline. Instead, I followed sensible influencers like the self-described People's Financial Advisor, Emmanuel Asuku, also known as the Eman Effect on Instagram, who is helping people make better choices with their money. His engaging financial videos on pensions, debt, and tax-efficient investment wrappers have amassed thousands of likes and shares on Instagram. Asuku is one to watch, as advisors can borrow a leaf from his page on how to communicate without jargon to consumers and potential investors. I do get jargon is inevitable in all walks of life, but the problem arises when that information is conveyed to people outside the industry. During my research for this piece, I trawled through the archive of Money Marketing for articles about jargon and what others have said about technical terms. It seems like it is a perennial problem, and I came across many articles decrying the industry's obsession with jargon. Some articles come from as far back as the notice. One article caught my attention. It was titled "Caught Through the Jargon" and was written on 16 November 2000. It said, and I quote, "Whenever we pick up the literature for a financial services product, whether it is for life insurance, pension, investment, banking, or some other product, how many items can you read through and understand first time round? I would suggest the answer is not many. This industry seems hell-bent on writing material with as much jargon and long-winded sentences as possible, and with minimal punctuation. Why? Do product providers think this makes them look good? After all, it shows that they know what they are talking about. True. But who is the literature for? The product providers do not need it. It's their products, and they should know what it is all about. The provider seems to lose sight of the fact that the literature is for the public, namely the ordinary man or woman in the street. What they also seem to forget is that their time is precious. There is no need to produce a 20-page brochure when 3 or 4 pages could cover the key information just as well." End of quote. The author of the article is spot on in their appraisal of the financial services industry. George Orwell, who championed plain English in his works, would have been proud of the writer. In his essay, Politics and the English Language, Orwell wrote, "Never use a foreign phrase, a scientific word, or a jargon word if you can think of an everyday English equivalent. Jargon is good with industry insiders, but bad with consumers, as they find them off-putting. Many consumers find it difficult to tell the difference between an IFA and ISA." This is backed up in research carried out 2 years ago by the Investment Association in partnership with the Wisdom Council. It found that 3/4 of investors struggle with technical terms, while others have difficulty understanding a range of commonly used terms. This problem has persisted over the years. Another article dated 12 July 2011 quoted the former pension minister, Steve Webb, who said the industry has been guilty of hiding behind unintelligible language and confusing jargon. His recommendation that providers and advisors simplify baffling industry jargon was supported by the Association of British Insurers and the Financial Conduct Authority. But not everyone agrees that the industry can be totally jargon-free. Adam Hicks, head of research at the Protection Group, says, "I don't think jargon is something you can get away from. I think it's always going to be there just because the complexity of a lot of these products." He adds, "The reason there is jargon is because what the industry does is complex, whether it's investment, mortgages, or protection. Hicks, who has been in the industry for more than 15 years, admits that he still struggles at times with financial jargon. He says there are lots of abbreviations that your average man on the street cannot understand. The big risk of that is when you're speaking to a potential client, you can make them look stupid. And that is not a place to be, particularly if you're an end consumer. By the end of the meeting, the client may not have bought into what you were trying to sell them. He suggests that advisors should look at the medical profession to simplify communication. You go to a GP surgery and they talk about a medical condition to you in layman terms. They have to explain it in a simplistic way. Advisors should be taking that same approach, he says. Hicks has a foolproof way of dealing with complicated industry jargon in his write-ups that he runs past his wife. If I'm writing something complicated for an audience, I go to my wife, who doesn't work in financial services, and ask her, do you understand what I have said there? And if she doesn't, I will find another way of writing it, he says. The editor of Money Alive, Ian Biston, agrees. I would say test your communication with your target group. Don't speak to your colleague about it because they are the worst people. We all work in the industry and we all have got the same blind spots, he says. It's particularly important because of what the FCA is talking about now with the consumer duty. It's not just about issuing communication as a compliance. It's about issuing communication that people actually understand. The regulator launched its consumer duty consultation 2 months ago to create an environment where consumers are better equipped to achieve good outcomes from financial services. The FCA wants advisors and firms to do more for customers by asking themselves questions such as, would I be happy to be treated in the way my firm treated customers? Or would I recommend my firm's products and services to my friends and family? And to achieve that, firms need to ensure their communication enables consumers to make and act on well-informed decisions. Let's hope firms and advisors heed the call. I believe they can, given my experience so far. This is my first long personal piece since I joined Money Marketing, and it will be remiss of me not to say how excited I am to join the advice sector. I have been welcomed with open arms, and nearly everyone I have encountered has been pleasant and willing to help. I find it surprising coming from a tabloid space where I was accustomed to receiving abuse from strangers and no comment from corporate PRs. Here it is different, and I find it refreshing. Long may it continue. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mamadou. Like I say, I think you've been doing sterling work, and long may it continue. Thank you very much for tuning in today. Don't forget, you can catch us on Apple, Podbean, Spotify, or directly from moneymarketing.co.uk if you want to listen to other podcast episodes in the future or catch up on ones that we've put out previously. You can also follow us on LinkedIn and Twitter to keep up with all the latest news, views, and analysis. And you can sign up for our newsletter. Until next time, goodbye.